The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Almost 30 years ago now, a few people with the encouragement of Joseph Goldstein started the first journal, kind of newspaper magazine for the Insight Meditation community in America or in the world, and they chose the name Inquiring Mind, and because they felt that this was a very important part of this practice of ours, of Buddhist practice, is to have an inquiring mind, to inquire. And to inquire is to have questions, is to question what's going on, look more carefully at what's going on. And it's not so much about being, you know, reading a book about Buddhism and learning the facts, but rather learning how to go into your life, wherever you go, wherever you are, with an ability to investigate, an ability to ask yourself, what is going on here? What's happening here? Even when things are pretty much exactly like they've always been. Nothing seems to be changed, everything's part ordinary. What does the inquiring mind stir up? What does it look at? What does it discover? Are things really the same day after day? What's different? What's happening to you? What's useful to look at? And if the inquiring mind, one of the interesting things with the inquiring mind is the inquiring mind inquires into itself. And what's the quality of this mind? What's the mood? What's the attitudes? What's the beliefs that are operating when you go about anything you do? And so the ability to ask questions, basic Vipassana question is the question, what is this? And there's a wonderful way of practicing where you kind of ask, what is this? But you don't settle for any verbal answer. It's more like, what is this? It's like, look more closely now. And then ask the question again, what is this? Then look more closely, what is this? And see what reveals itself, what shows itself almost wordlessly without your explanation of what's there. Explanations tend to get in the way of the inquiring mind that, you know, digs further, or looks further, understands more deeply what's going on. And so there's many questions you can bring. One of the interesting questions that I think for Vipassana students is the question, what am I not paying attention to now? What am I not paying attention to? Because chances are you're not paying attention to everything you could. Probably what you pay attention to is a very narrow sliver of reality, a very narrow sliver of your mind. So you ask the question, what am I not paying attention to now? Does that open you up? Does that kind of expand your horizons so you maybe notice more? Some people are self-obsessed. What am I not paying attention to right now? Well, I'm not paying attention to other people. Some people are other people obsessed. And so maybe pay attention to yourself. Some people, you know, there's a lot of different biases and selectivity process we have. So the question is, what am I not paying attention to now? Is an interesting one. Another one that it's a nice question is to ask yourself, what am I not accepting right now? Or to change the question around, what needs acceptance right now? What could I accept right now? And find yourself in a really challenging situation that's demanding and stressful for you, and ask that question. Chances are you're not asking that question. And so what needs acceptance right now? Maybe what needs acceptance is the fact that you're stressed out and it's difficult and chaotic and you don't know what to do. Is there some way of accepting it or being relaxed about it or opening to it where you're not bothered by it or oppressed by it or being pushed around by it? It's a very powerful thing to have some kind of an acceptance in the mind. Doesn't mean you condone something or agree that it has to continue the way it is, but to have the mind relaxed and open, this is how it is, and receive it and let it be. Another interesting question, the whole series of questions that are interesting to ask is about yourself. Who do you think you are? How are you presenting yourself to others? Is an interesting question. Most people, most of the time, not some of you I know, certainly, but most people, most of the time, when they're involved in social interactions with people, have some concern about how they're presenting themselves to others, how they're seen by others. And to inquire into that, well, how do I want to be seen? What am I trying to? What kind of impression am I trying to create right now? Am I trying to hide so people don't see part of who I am? Am I trying to create a certain kind of persona so people think good about me? Am I being driven by the desire to be liked by people, and so I'm trying to do the variety of social gymnastics that I'm capable of doing to ensure that people will like me, or certainly not reject me. So this whole kind of self-concern, self-image, self-identity, how we want to represent ourselves, is a very powerful place to inquire. Who am I in this situation? Who do I want to be? What am I trying to be? And then there's all kinds of, to question what happens as we practice. As we practice mindfulness, to pay attention to the present moment, as we practice concentration and calm down, we can start asking ourselves about what our experience is, and how do we work with it? How do we find our peace with it? Where's the happiness in this situation? Where's the stress? What is helpful in this situation? What helps bring a delightful stillness to my mind, to my heart? What opens me in this situation? What connects me to others in this situation? How can I be more connected? How can I feel more present for people? What I'm trying to get across here is the inquiring mind of this practice is one that asks a lot of questions. And that one of the tasks of someone who's doing Buddhist practice, I believe, is to begin asking more questions than you normally do. And try to, as you ask questions of your situation, of yourself, to then become skilled at knowing what kind of questions to ask. I remember when my sons were quite young, some of them, one of them, asked questions all the time. And I did not find them helpful. But what questions are useful to ask? What are not useful to ask in different situations? So that's kind of a long introduction to kind of pass the buck to you. You're supposed to be asking questions. What questions do you have? What kind of questions do you have that you... Not necessarily you want them answered here by me or by anybody, but what questions do you have in your life? What questions do you carry with you? What are the questions that drive you and move you through your life and motivate you? I'll tell you one that was important for me in my early years of practice. I spent, when I was 20 or 21, I spent a week alone on a small farm, small dairy farm that had 5 cows that I was responsible for milking. I would get them in from the fields and milk them and take them out. And I lived in this very small rural place where the only person I saw for the week in the distance was the mail carrier. Otherwise, I didn't see anybody or talk to anybody. And I wasn't intending to be a hermit for a week, but that's just how it ended up. I was left, the only person left with the cows. It was the first time in my life where I had that kind of solitude, where I wasn't around people and family and people. It was a new experience for me. And what happened in the course of the week is my mind got quieter and quieter, and my perception became more acute. And I remember looking at trees and nature and objects in the house I lived in, and they sparkled. They kind of stood out in the highlight. It was like so beautiful to look at everything because my perception was, was less distracted, I was less agitated in my mind, so I could see in a more clear, acute way. And I also became much more acutely aware of my inner functioning, my thoughts. And I'd never been so intimate with my thinking process in my life before. It was kind of like they sparkled, just like the trees sparkled in that stillness of my mind. And just, wow, these thoughts, wow, this is quite something. And I loved the intimacy, I loved the stillness, it felt very precious. By the end of the 7 days that I had alone, I felt so connected to myself, to the world. I felt it was such a nice, beautiful experience. And then my friends who owned the farm came back. I was caretaking for them when they went for a vacation. And and then we were social again, you know, I was social again. And then that intimacy and the presence and the stillness that I had when I was alone pretty quickly dissipated. And then the question I had after that for myself was, how can I be alone with others? Not aloof and alone, but how could I have this kind of precious, intimate, cute sense of awareness to myself and the world around me, even when I'm with people? And I could see that when I got involved with people, my mind would get much more busy with what I wanted, what they wanted, how I presented myself, what they thought of me. You know, it's all these games or concerns that I had when I got social. So the question was, how can I be alone with others? And it was good because, I mean, another option I could have had was to become a hermit. Right? Well, this is great. I'll just go forget these people. I'll go live alone. But somehow or other, that wasn't what my question. My question was, how can I do this together with others and social? And so that became my task for a good number of years, was how to discover, how to not get caught up in the social machinations, how to stay present and calm and have that kind of intimacy. And I found that the practice of meditation helped a lot because it got me in touch with a still inner stillness and calm and mindfulness that then I could use to explore and question how I lost that and what would happen when I lost it and why I lost it and how to kind of come back to it. So that question served me really well. Another question that I carried with me when I went to the monastery was the question I'd read just before I went to the monastery. I just opened a book randomly on a bookshelf in a bookstore, and it's in the spiritual section. And the book said that, or the page said something like, "The basic human problem is something like I forget. Now I forget all these years later." Because I reworded it for myself. But the basic problem is not being connected, feelings being separate. And so I kind of didn't like it being stated negatively, so I rephrased it for myself as a question. And the question for myself was, how can I participate more fully with what I'm doing? And for me, this became a great question as I entered the monastery, was how can I participate more fully with whatever I was doing? And the monastery for me, it was a kind of an unusual environment where I could really kind of experiment and practice being fully present for whatever I was doing with my full body, my mind, my heart, and explore what that meant. So that became a very important question for me. How do I participate more fully? So how about for you? What are some questions that you've had? What are some questions that motivate you in your life and your spiritual life? What are some of the questions you've held? What are some of the questions that are really important for you, are so important that we would do you a tremendous disservice if we answered them? So who would like to offer some? Please use the mic. So we have two of them, so we can pass them around at the same time. So.
Can I risk asking what the answer to the first question was?
The question of?
How can I keep this stillness in and interact with others?
Well, it doesn't come with a simple answer. It came from years of practice. It came from having that question and carrying that question, using that question to keep looking at myself and looking and seeing particularly how I lost it. And that's why meditation was helpful. Because then I had some reference point of being a little bit calmer than usual. And then as I left meditation and started my social life, I could watch much more carefully. It was like a highlight. I could see how I was afraid. For me, fear was a big thing. So I get afraid in the social interactions. And I'd be very concerned. I really wanted people. I was kind of addicted to wanting people, everyone to like me. And one way to be miserable... is to try to make everyone like you. It's really, you know, it's not possible, right? So, you know, if that's what you feel like you need to have, you're in trouble. So I got to see all these things. I got to, so seeing how my mind operated, seeing how I related to people and myself, slowly over the years, I got wiser and wiser and understood those things better. That's where the answer came. So that's where, you know, maybe an example where if somebody said, this is how you do it, and this is the answer, it wouldn't have helped me. I had to really see it in myself.
Thank you.
So back in the outer hall, if you can maybe pass. And while it's being passed, if someone else wants to say something and raise their hand, and we can pass the other one around.
So, yes. So I ask myself frequently, what do I need to know? And another favorite one is, what am I thinking now? Is it useful? Is it helpful? Mm. How do those thoughts make me feel? Is that how I choose to feel as I live my life? Is it helpful? And when it's not, or when I believe it's not, it's how can I let go of this? And then I repeat the wonderful phrase, let go a little, be a little happy. Let go a lot, have a lot of happiness. And then I usually stop and smile.
Great questions. Thank you.
Yeah.
For many years, I struggled with the question of how can I try to be a good Buddhist and not be clinging, but also not give up my passions.
So how to be a good Buddhist, how not to cling without giving up your passion, your interest, your enthusiasm. It's a great question. Don't give us the answer, but have you found some answers?
Well, for a while I stayed away.
Did that help? Your question? To explore something different?
I don't know. I'm still working on it. I'm not clinging to being a good Buddhist.
Whew, that's good.
Or even trying to be a good Buddhist. But I see a lot of benefit in coming to meditation. I feel that need, so I still come. But I'm just being, I think.
Some questions atrophy, or some questions just fade away. They're never answered, they just fade away.
I just feel that I cannot give up my passion, so...
So maybe the question is not relevant.
Yeah, so I just hang in there.
Good. Thank you. Here.
Hi. I'm a scientist, and my job is to ask questions all the time, and I feel you bringing up this whole asking a good question, immediately I'm thinking, oh my gosh, am I asking a good question or not? And I feel like overcoming this self-judgmentalness of asking a question becomes my own question.
That's great. That is really important. I think a second-order kind of questioning that looks at the impact of how we're approaching our life. The impact. So, you know, if you ask, it's possible to ask here, you know, Gil says you should ask questions, and then you get all worked up in your questions and more anxious and more busy and trying to get the good, best question and end up with a headache. But the higher order kind of overview is, how do I ask questions, or what are the right questions, or how do I approach whatever's happening here? How do I inquire in such a way that I become more still and more peaceful and more calm? Or more free. And so it's very important to use mindfulness to see that the way you ask questions is not being helpful. So one approach then would be, if this approach of asking questions is too busy or too agitated, is there another way? Is there some way that's more peaceful?
There are lots of questions in my mind, but what is the one that these days is just sticking to my mind is about the physical pain. The main theme you've been discussing the past 6 months I've been coming here, like 90%, has been about clinging, attachment, you know, wanting something and to develop skills to resist that. But this question is about what if a pain is being inflicted on you from outside. I'm thinking about people who get tortured in political prisons.
Yeah.
Men of convictions, men who are very strong, and they go under on the torture table. And or people in Auschwitz who did not have any future. They knew that the next minute they might die. I'm thinking, my question is, how with Buddhist discipline one can deal with these situations. So I'm pondering on that constantly.
Well, you know, good, okay. I was tempted to try to say something, but that's not the task tonight, is to answer questions, maybe, you know. But that's great to hear that's your concern. So so it's one thing to understand Buddhist principles and Buddhist practice and ideas in the ordinary activities of our life. It's useful sometimes to let go, it's useful to be peaceful or something. But what do you do in extreme situations where there's violence and someone's really causing tremendous suffering on you or on other people? And are you supposed to just sit there and accept it? And no, this is fine, I'll focus on my breath. You know, what happens then? Does the Buddhist principles and Buddhist practices have any bearing in these extreme situations? I guess is the question, right? Good. If you could use the mic, then everyone can hear.
Okay. Is it on?
Yeah.
Okay. So, in my work, but now with his question, my question doesn't... it's interesting how we influence each other. And in asking questions in my work, I am very cognizant and aware of the guiding principles in which I form questions. And those guiding principles can form those questions so that, because I know my question will influence, and that answer that comes back will influence me. And in my practice of interviewing, I believe those guiding principles of kindness, curiosity, acceptance, and a desire to understand and accept lays a foundation that then in the dialogue we can construct a more fruitful conversation. Thus, my work is to do that. And when you asked that question, I thought, my God, I don't do that to myself in that same manner, meaning being very cognizant of how I frame the question with appreciation and acceptance already in the structure of the question itself, right?
Uh-huh. And so you don't approach yourself with that kind of acceptance and kindness.
Or prototyping of the question that demonstrates implicitly the values and beliefs, consciously,
uh-huh.
Right? Instead, what the heck? You know, I don't see why you do that. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So that was very curious to me.
Great.
So I asked myself the question, why don't I take the same care in framing questions
for
to
yourself.
Myself?
Great. Lovely. Thank you.
For most of my life, my working life, I've been involved in science as well as this other lady over here. And at one level, the focus of my work was to find the answer to that question. It's a burning question, and we want to pursue further knowledge or discover something that's of great worth to humankind or some such thing. But I've come to realize that questions are not perhaps not best looked at as a way to point into an answer, and to keep focusing on the answer, the answer, the answer, the answer. But I think that's wrong. I mean, it's only one way to use a question. I think questions are great leaders. If you have a question framed in one way, then maybe the more clever way to deal with the question is to find another question that's related, or frame the question differently, but use the question as a leader into guiding how we are to live. Well, for one thing, of course, we want to pursue whatever we're working on according to basic Buddhist principles, you know, of kindness and compassion and concern for something besides increasing my net worth, et cetera, et cetera. There's many other ways to go to use a question besides just to seek the answer. I mean, the answer is rather simplistic, and sometimes it's nothing but a dead end.
Great. I love hearing this. It's very significant what you're saying.
Yeah, I find that very, very useful, but it's not necessarily easy. Okay, you've got one question on the table in front of you, and so we're going to say, well, I'm not going to just go answer after the answer to that question. So then where do I go? What do I focus on? How do I choose the next direction to go? Or how do I know not to go that way, because that's not productive? Well, that takes a lot of wisdom and maybe some luck or maybe some inspiration from some other source as well or something.
So you're pointing to two things. Sometimes what you said in the beginning was there's something very significant about asking a question, but not looking for an answer, but letting the question you call say be to lead you, or my vocabulary say to open you, to kind of expand your horizon to see more deeply or more clearly or more. What is this? And it's kind of, and questions are openers. The second thing you're asking is that sometimes you do have to have the questions answered. Because there are choices to be made in life, and so which direction to go, and so what questions and what where do you find answers to things that do need answers?
Yeah, to realize that sometimes the what appears to be the direct straight answer to the question is not the easiest or best way to go. Go around, come at it from another direction.
Great, thank you. Aaron, could you pass it to?
Thank you. This relates to the last point. I came to meditation with the question, how can I be more cool, calm, and collected? And instead, I keep getting the answer to, how can I cultivate generosity? Somebody's not listening very well.
Thank you. So in the back room.
Not so much a question as just a reminder for those of us who are wearing this, if you could hold these mics really close to your mouths. It's been difficult to hear some of the remarks. Thank you.
Hi, I have these two questions which are always like connected to each other, and it's, am I being authentic in this moment, and is there an opportunity to love?
Is there not?
Is there an opportunity to love?
Great question.
So, but somehow they're always connected with each other.
And have you carried those two questions with you for a long time? Are they relatively new for you? Or?
Yeah, they've been around for a few years. They don't seem to go.
And has it been useful for you to carry these questions with you through your life?
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Hi. I am trying to ask myself how I'm going to be able to change myself. I've been working on that, especially after I I read, everything is changing. So every day I ask myself how I'm going to change myself, because there is a lot of things, even the, like what you said, when people like you, sometimes it's not good. So I'm trying to see how I'm going to be like different, what I should change to ease, like, because sometimes from this love you get pain. So I'm always working on this.
So how to change yourself.
How to change myself.
So you can have more.
Like to ease.
Have more ease.
Exactly.
To find the ease.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So everything's changing. And how do you participate in the change? How do you change yourself so uh-huh. that you're at ease with it or have more ease with it all?
Exactly, yeah.
Great question. Has that been a useful question for you to carry? Have you had some answers?
Yeah, I've been trying to change a lot of things in a good way. Like I used to control everything, like at home, you know. And that will give me a lot of work because I have to be responsible for everything. So now I am trying to just take it easy, and that's working.
It's probably more easeful for the other people at home, too.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So that's just one example.
Great, thank you.
It's interesting, because my question is actually the opposite. How to stop wanting to change myself is my question. How to learn to be satisfied with what I am.
Great. That's also, both are great questions at different times. So maybe, and now I'm back in the outer hall.
I think this lady over here triggered something for me that's similar, and that is something that's very helpful for me and that I forget a lot is, how can I help? How can I help in this situation?
Mm-hmm.
And it tends to simplify things a little bit. And I don't want to suggest that life is simple. But when I have the greatest difficulty to try and find my way through something, I think I'm often forgetting, how can I help?
Great.
I was at a concert last night, a live concert, where I was right up in the front row, and I felt so much in the moment because I could see the performers, the music was really loud, it was pervasive, I guess, all around me, and you could feel in your body. And it was so good because of being there in the moment. But then how do you stimulate your senses or be aware of your senses like that throughout the rest of life? Because I would like to have that feeling more often, where you're just right there with your senses.
Without having to turn up the radio.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's a place that I just keep thinking, oh, I want to go back to that, but I don't know how to do that. And my guess is that I have to be more in tune with my body. But it just seems like, you know, there's just certain situations, maybe out in nature where you're feeling stimulated all around, but a lot of times the head, you know, takes over and you don't just feel right. All the senses coming in.
Great, thank you. So, okay. So I'd like to end with a question for you, to offer you for the evening, for the week, or whatever. And to introduce the question, to make it a little bit more understandable or something, I think that a fair number of people here in our society around us, probably a lot of you, have cell phones, and nowadays. And And some of you carried with you. You don't just leave it at home, and you know that's not, you know, you carried with you. So, you know, some people carry it in their pockets, but then you take it out and you put it down, and you know. And I've noticed in myself that one of the habits or one of the instincts that I've cultivated now in our cell phone culture is that I kind of always know where my cell phone is. I now have an expensive cell phone, smartphone, right? So, you know, I wouldn't want to, you know, and so, you know, I kind of always know where it is. I know it's my pocket. I know it's on the table. I know it's on the floor. There's an activity, kind of almost subconscious activity that goes on that, you know, where is it? You know, kind of know where it is. In the old days, it might have been, you know, maybe still, I hope it's still, it'd be like a parent of a young child. You know, you might be working in the kitchen, but you know where the kid is always. You know what they're doing. You always kind of know, but you're doing your work or whatever. So that's the kind of... So the question is, do you know where your mind is? Do you know where your mind is? And can you cultivate the same intuitive or habit of knowing where your mind is as you do for your cell phone?
You haven't reached that state yet with yourself.
Sorry?
What did you say?
Oh, what you said here. Oh, she's. You want to say it more loudly?
Oh, okay.
I don't know if I could.
What if you're not at that stage yet with your cell phone?
I don't know where
it is. Hopefully you don't have to go out and get a cell phone to discover how to do it. Before cell phones, people were mindful. People knew what was, you know, they tracked what was going on. But to make it a habit, and this is what I've learned that you can do with regular practice. It takes time, but you can develop a regular kind of habit or instinct to always kind of be tracking what's going on in your mind, your thoughts, your feelings, your reactions. So it's second nature. So you don't lose yourself. You don't get lost and don't know what's going on inside because you're so caught up in the world or your fantasy or whatever it might be. And so you're always, someone asks you, where's your mind? You're ready to tell them, this is where I'm here. So if you have a cell phone, if you understand the analogy, perhaps that could give you a little encouragement, because it doesn't take a lot of attention, effort, energy to make this second nature, to be aware of yourself. Just like it doesn't take, after a while having cell phones, it doesn't take a lot of effort and energy to kind of know where it is. It just kind of becomes second nature almost for some of us. And so it may be second nature for you to know where your mind is. Where's your mind now? So thank you for all the questions you have, and it's my belief that everyone comes to practice with questions. It might not be worded with a question mark at the end, but the inquiring mind is what brings you to practice. And so you might look at yourself and see, what's the role of practice for you? What are the practices that brought you to come here to IMC to meditate? What are useful questions that you can add to your life? And you might ask some of your good friends that you respect a lot what questions they carry about their life. You could learn a lot from someone if you ask them these kinds of, you know, ask them what questions they've had. So, thank you all.